this episode of the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. I'm Lance Carter. Britt Marling wrote and stars in the time travel drama Sound of My Voice. The film's about a couple who go undercover in a cult in an attempt to refute the claims that its leader, Maggie, played by Marling, is from the future. The two quickly find out that they're in far deeper than they bargained for. Britt is hands down a perfect example of the mantra, create your own work. I talked to her last year for Another Earth when she was just starting to get on everyone's radar. I talked to Britt with co-writer and director, and I'm totally going to get this name wrong, Zal Batmanghili. Say that fast twice. Anyway, I talked to them at WonderCon about how they came up with the idea for the film, filming without a permit in L.A., and how the two worked together as writers. I really do appreciate it when you support the advertisers. I really do. Every little click does help. And don't forget, we have a bunch of other cool stuff available. Just check everything out on the site, dailyactor.com. And now, here's Britt and Zal. I got that part right.
So how did you decide to bring those guys out in character? Why did you decide to do that?
We just feel like they're so good. Didn't you guys think they were good?
They were really good, yeah.
So we're just into how, like, seriously they take it. You know, for us, this movie was made with a lot of love. Everyone worked from the goodness of their own heart. There was really no money in this movie. And we just made another movie this fall, or shot another movie this fall, and everyone was getting paid to do that movie. And there were some differences. The paid one, everyone was a lot more professional. But in Sound of My Voice, people just came at it with so much passion. And it compensated from any lack of professionalism. And people were so devoted. And I know that Christy and Richard, who played Mel and Klaus, are so committed and so passionate that it's fun to see that. So every Thursday night, I don't know if any of you guys are from L.A., every Thursday night they do this, you know, sort of interactive element. And I just think it's fun. It's different.
We're just trying out the things that, like, we would like to do. Like, I'd love to go see a film and then have it become in an interactive space where, like, suddenly the narrative, like, keeps going, or the narrative begins and then takes you to the theater and then it goes someplace else. And so it's fun to try those things out.
The idea of time travel as a genre is very well explored and in literature and films and television series and what have you. What do you guys actually bring to the table? You think that's makes your film distinct from those, you know, past films?
Provocative question. That's a good one. Well, Terminator is one of my favorite films, and so is Terminator 2. But I think that what we bring to the table that's different is that for us, time travel is synonymous for belief, the belief in all the things that are not seen. And also for the most outlandish claim that you could possibly make. To say that you're a time traveler is even weirder than saying you're an alien or whatever. I mean, it's really strange to sit down in a basement and be face-to-face with a real time traveler, someone who claims to be a real time traveler. And so for us, it was about the sort of nuts and bolts of, like, what would it be like if you were face-to-face like we are now with someone who claimed to be from the future?
And figuring out, like, the real practicalities of that. I mean, usually in science fiction, the concept is so big, it's hard to come down to earth for the micro movements of, like, if you came from the future and you arrived here, what would you be like? I mean, would your immune system be depressed from that travel? Like, would you be well? Would you be ill? Like, would you be affected by microorganisms of the time period and be hiding out in a basement? Like, how would it all practically work?
And if you were a very sophisticated con artist, what would you do to convince people you were from the future? And what would that give you? What benefits would that give you? And so for us, it's also a question of, is she or isn't she? That's really a major part of the movie.
How do you keep the spoilers out? I mean, with Twitter and everything else, how do you keep spoilers away from people?
It's up to you guys.
That's such a good question, but I think that when the audience connects with something, because even from Sundance and South by Southwest, we haven't seen this too much. It's like people enjoy the experience so much that they want other people to go have it, that they're like, don't talk about it, like, don't tell, just go. And it's a nice feeling to feel people coming around it that way and sort of protecting the ideas in it so that everyone can see it for themselves.
And maybe it's a bit of a bummer that the trailer gives away more than, you know, one would like, but I think the film has so many ups and downs and is such a thrill ride. I don't know how many of you guys have seen the film, but I hope that you guys get to all see it, and that it's actually really fun and has a lot of integrity in and of itself. So It's fun no matter what you know.
You mentioned earlier something about viral marketing. What exactly have you guys been doing online and stuff like that?
Well, we released the first 12 minutes, and the 12 minutes has interactive hotspots in it. Mm. So it takes you to other videos, like other cult members have made their own videos and stuff. And then they have meetings in L.A., and you'll start seeing, as we get closer to the release, meetings pop up in other places.
I heard it was actually a few months back. There was some form of viral marketing where, like, they're filming everybody, random people doing the handshake, actually.
People are learning that and posting it.
I actually did that like a couple of months ago, and then they started doing it. And it's like, I remember most of that.
Wow.
It's cool. When we were at South by Southwest, some girls came up and they had like learned it.
They were dressed all in white.
All in white.
Oh, wow. So you already got people dressing up for your movie.
It's pretty.
Next year, Comic Con, yeah. Group of people from Sound of My Voice.
Part two.
How much of the other cult members are explored? Because obviously we're experiencing all this through our protagonist, but like maybe the other couple that comes in with them, or do we see their story and maybe their point of view as to, you know, their belief or trust in your character?
It's very strictly POV, so it's very strict that it's Peter's POV that we take the story on. I think that's very important in telling stories, especially low-budget stories. It really ups your production value when you have one person you can sort of uses your avatar through a story, but I think everyone gets their moment in time. That other couple definitely has their moment. They have to make some tough decisions.
And I think you get to see through the different cult members why people are attracted to a group like this, and everyone is there for a different reason, from a different background, and that was part of what was interesting for us in researching cults and exploring it, because a lot of this happens in California. Seems to be this like hotbed for these ideas and bringing these groups together, and you find that the one thing everybody has in common, whether they're, you know, PJ is a teenager who's run away from his parents, or Joanne is a divorcee who, you know, lost her husband and has taken, no matter what where they're sort of coming from, they all have in common this feeling of like searching for a kind of meaning in their lives, and that Maggie seems to offer. You know, she's dress in white, follow this diet, come to these meetings, do these things, but I'm going to give you a prescription for like how to live and what the future will be like, and you will be a chosen one, you know, to be a survivor and be a part of some experience, and that seems so compelling.
You two were talking about like the challenges you had to face when you were making this, like the whole like filming on an airplane and playing it off like you weren't actually shooting on an airplane. Was there more scenarios like that where you're like filming on the LA bridge and making sure the cops weren't around or something like that?
We were such a small crew that we weren't worried about the cops on the LA bridge, but we had no money. So for example, we had an iMac that we bought, and we'd have to return it every 13 days because otherwise we'd have to pay for it, and we couldn't afford even a computer to edit the movie on.
Wow. So and that is heavy.
Three times.
So, like, you have to box it up, carry it. Like, I would park the car with the emergency lights on. Zal would run in. I mean, we'd all take turns turning in this computer. It was a lot of work, actually.
Oh, is that the bracelet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
I found out last night it glows in the dark.
Yeah, it's cool.
Cool.
Wow. The initial interest in like the idea of cults, was that something that you both were interested in before making the film, or did you guys kind of like one day just go, let's do this?
I think Melissa said really connects with me about the idea of a surrogate family. I think we're really hungry for family in America, especially if you like people are really pulled apart from their families.
Sure.
And so we were interested in the idea of what's the extreme version of that.
Yeah, I think also, you know, when you come out to L.A. to make movies or to do this kind of work or whatever, everybody's coming out on their own, you know, and you leave your sort of tribe behind. And then it's a question of that was your tribe by blood. Like, now what is the tribe that you're sort of making by choice or by what it is that you want to do or you think is important? And I think we were having that experience. And so somehow the cult world seemed really compelling.
In a lot of your answers, I've noticed that there seems to be perhaps a allegorical elements of religion in all this. Is that what your ultimate aim is? That maybe the exploration of forming a new religion, and these characters represent maybe some kind of religious figure, or am I reaching here?
No, I don't think you're reaching. I just think that we're not trying to form a new religion. I think that all the powerful religions are pretty much the same. And, you know, people like to pretend they're very different, but they're not. They're really about believing in something bigger than yourself, something that's unseen. and about having some faith. And I think that's not such a bad thing to have in the world right now. And I mean, I don't know if any specific religion is the one to prescribe to subscribe to. I mean, I'm not saying it one way or the other. I don't want to get involved in that. But I think having faith in this experience that we're having as a group of people on Earth, I don't know, I think that it helps a lot.
Yeah, I think it's less to do with maybe divine or not divine, like Maggie never claims that, but it has something to do with having belief in like a human future. And what is the human future? Like, what is the future of humanity? Like, how does this whole experiment not self-destruct with the environment and everything that's
really
going
well
on?
Yeah.
What's the process like when you work together as writers?
Last question.
You know, we have so much fun. Like, we come to it every day with, like, a set of hours. Like, this is our chunk of time we have together, and we just play. And sometimes we act things out. Like, we've come up with scenes. I mean, we've played between us every character in Sound of My Voice, you know. Sometimes I'm Klaus, and he's Joanne, and then, you know, he's Peter, and I'm Lorna. And, you know, we have the fights, and...
Sometimes she's Peter, I'm Lorna.
Sometimes Peter, he's Lorna.
Like, for example, the driving scene, we sat in two chairs, we put our chairs together like this, and we sat, and I said, you know, what if she is?
Nobody's from the future yet, and then you kind of like, that has been really helpful, I guess, the willingness to play.
So we do that for a while, and then finally
we're recording it the whole time?
No, we sometimes do. We sometimes
write it down. If it's been a particularly good one.
Britt writes a lot of that. I stay away from the writing part because I think that if it sticks, it sticks. Like, you just know it. And the stuff that doesn't stick sort of, like, goes away. Like, the stuff that, like, propels you forward, like, you can see it in your partner's eyes. Like, you'll be, like, telling a part of the story, like, oh, well, Maggie wakes up in a bathtub that's in a crack den. And either the person will light up or they'll be like, try again. And so... I think that works for us. And then we crack the story, and then the actual writing part of it happens really quickly. Like, we can do that once we know the story really well.
But that outlining part, like, takes a really... Like, once you play with these scenes and you're outlining it and you're again and again telling each other the narrative, telling it to people you know, and trying to make sure that the mathematics of the story work. And then once you feel those are, like, in place, then the actual writing and final draft doesn't take as long.
Yeah, because it's very important for us. Like, we are viewers first and foremost. Like, we view more than we make. You know? Like, so for us, it's important that the viewing experience is fun and thrilling and exciting and fresh and different. Like, those are our goals when we are writing something. How, when you watch in a theater, which I hope you will soon, how will you have the best experience possible? So that's really important to us. And how is it the most thrilling?
Thanks, guys, and thank you for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. Thank you so much again for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.